Joe Walker, how did it all come about? How did Muhammad Speaks come to arrange this interview?
Well, Gil, Angela Davis granted us this interview, this exclusive interview, because she recognizes that Muhammad Speaks is the one national publication that is dedicated to giving honest and direct coverage to the struggles of black Americans in this country. And it's important to note that the mass media has either distorted the Angela Davis story by painting her as a beautiful, brilliant black woman who has somehow gone astray, or completely ignored aspects of her case. Nowhere in the mass media has her side of the story been told. And so Muhammad Speaks editors were very anxious to get to her and to present questions that were being asked in the black community. And we went to the streets of Harlem knowing that although most black people overwhelmingly support Angela Davis, there were many questions being asked, questions in barbershops, in the corners, and so forth.
This was something an editor wouldn't, or at least a reporter wouldn't, instinctively think of. He'd probably be inclined to ask his own questions. How did it evolve that you'd think to ask the grassroots Harlemite?
Well, every black journalist should be a person who is the eyes and ears of his people. And in order to really keep your finger on the pulse, it's important not just to sit in the office. It's important to get out there and talk with the man and the woman in the street. And we talked to a wide range of people, people who are unemployed, students, people from a wide range of occupations. 556 people were interviewed, and I think slightly more women than men. And everywhere we went, there was interest in the case. There were questions. There's overwhelming support for her. But her answers to these questions, as you have shown here on this show, were also very honest and direct.
Would you say that the preponderance of people in Harlem are unaware of the specifics of her involvement and her history because of the inadequacies of press coverage that you cited?
I think undoubtedly. The kinds of stories like Life magazine's The Making of a Fugitive are kinds of things with which make her guilty before she's even tried. It's not new for black people in this country, but in this particular case, it's more ghastly than anything else because of the kinds of charges, because of the kinds of pressure that has come down on Angela Davis. But I think people feel that she is one of them. And this is an opinion that we got almost universally in the streets.
Ms. Burnham, in the interview, Ms. Davis expressed a pessimism that she can get a fair trial. How do you feel about that?
I think that Angela was accurately portraying the kind of fervor in the country that's been built up specifically for the purpose of denying her constitutional right to a fair trial. And Angela's situation is not a unique one. As she herself describes in the interview, very few black people in this country nowadays can get fair trials. And in particular, it becomes more and more impossible for a black militant or a black revolutionary to get a fair trial from the system.
Now, what about all these questions that have been raised about the manner in which she was extradited to California, all that security, the reports that as her attorney you weren't even apprised that she was being moved? Tell us about that.
That's correct. It was our estimate that Angela would not be leaving New York until Wednesday morning. She, in fact, was whisked out of her cell at 3 o'clock in the morning, Monday night. We were given no notice that she was to be moved. She herself was told, an officer at the jail came up and told her that her attorneys were waiting for her downstairs to inform her of her rights and that she should come immediately downstairs to the ground floor of the jail, ground level of the jail, and conference with her attorneys. Well, of course, this was just a hoax to get Angela out of her cell and to keep the other women in the jail who were supportive of Angela unapprised of what was going on. And once she got downstairs, she was manhandled by New York authorities. She was roughed up and beaten, and then transferred to California authorities. And you know about the conditions of her flight from New York to California. It was the most horrendous and harrowing experience for Angela.
Well, now, I recall the Justice Department saying that they had no jurisdiction in this matter, and yet a federal plane was used to transport her. Is
that's
that correct?
Correct. The involvement of the federal government has been clear, apparent throughout the whole history of Angela's present frame-up. The government presence was first felt when she was, a black woman with no criminal record, was placed on the 10 most wanted list. And this was the first entry of the federal government in this case, and their presence has been clear ever throughout. And this most recent episode of her transfer in a federal plane also shows the federal government's hand in the frame-up.
How about the conditions out in the jail where she is presently in California? Do they rival what she said exists here in the Women's House of Detention?
That's a very different situation in the California jail. There are different kinds of pressures on Angela there. She is not, as she was in New York, among her sisters. She's isolated, she's alone, because of the fact that there are no other women prisoners in the Marin County Jail. So she's held in solitary confinement there. She's held under very, very high, heavy security, much heavier, if that could be imagined, than the conditions under which she was held here in New York. It's a cleaner jail. It's a newer jail, that's for sure. In that sense, I guess it's a cut above the House of Detention. But there are other conditions which make it equally unbearable.
Ms. Mitchell, do you think, knowing Angela, that such pressure can crack her?
Oh, I think without a doubt that that's the intent of the pressure. But knowing Angela, I don't think it can. Mostly because she is so determined, not only in the fight for her own right to be free, but for the, you know, fight for the freedom of all black and oppressed people. And that in itself makes for a different kind of courage when the fight is beyond yourself. And for Angela, the fight has always been beyond herself.
I'd like to get into the actual legal charge that is leveled against her. Now, as I understand it, the evidence of pictures and whatnot seemed to make it pretty clear that she was not at the specific incident of the kidnapping of the judge and the chase in the van that followed where the shootings occurred. Yet she is charged with murder. Is that correct?
That's correct. Angela, the state of California has never alleged that Angela was anywhere present at the scene of that alleged crime.
Well, then, how can she be?
She's being charged pursuant to what in California is known as an aiding and abetting statute. And I guess in layman's language, what the statute means is that one who participates in criminal activity can be held liable as the principal. As the principal can be held liable for the results of that activity. It's alleged that Angela conspired with Jonathan Jackson and the San Quentin inmates in the events at their FCL.
I see. Is that common in most states in the United States?
It's not an unusual. There's a lot of confusion about that statute, but the statute itself is not unusual. What's unusual about it is the way that it's being used in this case. It's being used in a case where the state has almost no evidence on which to bring the charges against Angela. And that's what makes the statute unique.
Ms. Mitchell, what about the guns? Can you tell us about the guns? Why Ms. Davis purchased the guns, or does this fall within the bounds of the legality of the case?
Well, I think it's very much probably in the legality of the case, except that I was up at Yale Divinity School, and I asked the dean's office there how many of those people owned guns. And they were members of the clergy, every one of them. And they said, you know, 90% of them owned guns, and that they had owned them for a long time, but they did not think that they would be held accountable if somebody were to take those guns. I don't think that there is any question that there are more and more people who are, 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 there are more and more people who are armed. And I don't think that there's any question that this is a right of people, and that should be a right of black people in this country. So that Angela owned guns or allegedly owned guns, I don't think is the question here. I think the question is why they are using that to frame up an innocent person. And I think that's exactly what's happening.
Well, let's talk about the, the physiology of her development. She became a communist. Mm-hmm. Now, here is a... I read about her, and she came from a family of at least comfortable means. She's well-educated. What happened to Angela? How did it all come about?
Well, I think that there is a logical consequence and sequence of events that make people revolutionaries, that make people communists. And to assume that, one, either that you are disgruntled with your parents, you know, and that's the reason that you become a communist, is, you know, to look maybe at some people who, you know, may be new students or something, but certainly not with Angela, and certainly not with most people who become revolutionaries. I think that the sequence of events that made Angela a communist was, one, the seeing of the children in Birmingham bombed. Two, living in a society in New York in comfortable surroundings, but nevertheless seeing, as most of us do, our brothers and sisters living in absolutely uncomfortable surroundings. The same kind of an atmosphere at Brandeis. And of course, her acquaintanceship with revolutionaries, Algerian revolutionaries, French revolutionaries, and German revolutionaries when she was in Europe. I think her beginning to be acquainted with Marxist philosophy, that there was in her own understanding a way not only to look at the problems in this world, but a way to change those. And I think that that's what made Angela communist.
Okay, let's talk about the support that is being raised in her behalf.
Well, I am from the New York Defense Committee to defend Angela Davis, which is overall East Coast. And we have really been amazed at the kind of support. Not so much because we didn't think people would automatically assume and know, as we do, that Angela is innocent, but because we felt that people had been victims for so long of repression that there might be an inability to begin to speak out against that repression. But instead, I think people have begun to understand that that repression might bounce back on them, that kind of repression being used on Angela will be used against them, and that they have responded to Angela's plight in a way that I think is just unprecedented. So that in addition to the springing up of committees which have affiliated themselves to the New York Committee in Queens, in NYU, Brooklyn College, City College, Columbia, there's even a group at Mount Sinai Hospital, there's a group of garment workers, you know, this kind of thing, the Black Women's Committee.
What are they doing, actually? Are they raising funds, or are they just trying to publicize the events of her situation?
They are doing both. But they are also, in addition to publicizing it, they are using it as a means to educate people to what is happening. Because as Mr. Walker has said, there has been, you know, like a dearth of information in the press. And so we have had to get the information to people. But in New York, we were also very much concerned with the fight against extradition, which we were not successful in winning. But I think that that kind of support and the more that we're able to muster, and that's what the committees are all about, will help to get her that necessary fair trial in California.
There have been international outcries raised about the plight of various people. Do you think that if this outcry in behalf of Ms. Davis is internationalized and is loud enough, that it might have an effect on what happens in the courtroom in California?
I think it absolutely will. I think that the international outcries have come from Africa, just in, you know, tremendous amounts, telegrams that we've gotten duplicates of that have been sent to Governor Rockefeller and to President Nixon. There have been telegrams and marches and demonstrations in West Germany and East Germany, from the Soviet Union, from Italy. There are beautiful cards of, you know, that are made up by children from France, from Denmark.
Is this necessarily all communist or non-communist or what?
Oh, they're communist and non-communist.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reason that I'm giving you the whole picture of what countries they come from. And with, you know, I have no doubt that the Communist Party has played a very leading role in trying to get people to be educated to what is going on. I have been invited, for example, to West Berlin to speak, so that I think that people will understand that this is a worldwide thing. But I think the heart of the thing has to be right here in the United States. That's where we have to put the biggest pressure.
Well, what about the feminist movement that's underway here in America? Has much support come from these groups? Anybody?
Well, at least me, I don't know.
All right. All right.
Well, I think that there are two approaches within the women's liberation movement. In the Third World Women's Liberation Movement, there has been absolute support for Angela Davis. Among Women's Strike for Peace, we have received certain resolutions. There are, however, a number of women within what is called the Women's Liberation Movement that have founded not so much at this point a big thing in their program. And I think that until they begin to see that racism and repression is as much a problem for the women's liberation movement, that they are going to be very much victims of their failure to see that.
Let's talk a little bit more about her. Do you want to say something?
No.
Let's talk about her political philosophy. Do you think that there's another stage of development for her? Do you think that there's some day that she may decide not to be a communist or what?
Well, I am a member of the Communist Party.
Yes, I know that.
And I would have to put any communist in my own, you know,
seat.
I think Angela and I would almost make the very same statement. I would make the statement that she did in her interview. The reasons that we joined the Communist Party were because we felt that among the first reasons that the Communist Party offered the vehicle in which we could fight for a change of the economic and social conditions in this country, which kept black people, working people in bondage. And we felt that that was the vehicle that we would use to organize masses of people. There's nothing that would indicate a change in that. And so, in my opinion, Angela will be a member of the Communist Party.
All right. Ms. Burnham, what about legal groups across this country? Was there an avalanche of requests to come to her legal defense?
Yeah, there's been considerable activity among various bar associations here in New York and California, and across the country on Angela's behalf. In our New York extradition proceeding, we were aided by the National Conference of Black Lawyers, a group of militant activist black lawyers here, which has its center here in New York, as well as by the New York Civil Liberties Union and an organization called the National Lawyers Guild, and a fourth organization known as the New Women Lawyers. So there's been considerable activity among lawyers on Angela's behalf. I recently spoke to a group of black lawyers in Detroit who are very much interested in participating in her defense in whatever way they can.
Ms. Davis chronicled a horrifying set of circumstances in the Women's House of Detention here in New York. What have you seen in your visits there?
Well, I certainly haven't seen as much as Angela has seen because my visits are limited to council room there, which is located on the ground floor of the institution, and I've never seen the cell areas, which certainly are, as she described them, miserable conditions. But just I can say that Angela has had fantastic support among both the inmates at the prison as well as the officers. The officers are mainly black and Puerto Rican, and in whatever way, whatever a small way they can, they've made it clear to Angela that she has their full support.
How do you feel about the law that no cameras are allowed inside of a prison? Do you think that that's...
I think that that law, in as much as it applies to Angela's case and cases like hers, is to limit the ability of the defendant to state his own case. What's happened in Angela's case is that she has been tried and convicted by a hostile press, a press which began to convict her immediately after August 7th, before any formal charges were brought against her. And Angela in California has been gagged. There's a gag rule which applies to her and other people who are associated with the case, which silences people on matters of importance relating to her case. And the law in New York barring press people from the jail has the same effect. The effect of it is to keep all the prejudice on the side of the government side in Angela's case.
Joe Walker, what can you add to this in your endeavors to get inside the Women's House of Detention or other jails to talk with prisoners? Have you been outright rebuffed, or have you been given the runaround, or what?
Well, most of the attempts we've made in investigating prison conditions have been in my area, in New York and New Jersey, and you're not permitted at all to get in. We have to rely on the testimony of inmates who have been in and come out, or lawyers in individual cases. But in all of these cases, it's like Angela says in her interview, I think she adequately describes them as dungeons, places built decades and decades ago, overcrowding, and all kind of incredible conditions, which the recent tomb riots here in New York certainly substantiate.
Ms. Mitchell, what about the gentleman that was arrested with Miss Davis? Where is he, Mr. Poindexter?
David Poindexter?
Yes.
As you know, he's under $100,000 bail, which, you know, to say is exorbitant, is to put it mildly. David is at this moment in New York. He travels between New York and Chicago, and they have finally given him the right to go to Florida, but not to Brooklyn. So that he's in the southern jurisdiction. I think you will notice in the earlier film clips that you showed that David Poindexter showed up on almost every line of march that was in support of Angela Davis. And wherever he can travel, in other words, in New York City or Queens, I think, and in Chicago, he has been at Angela Davis rallies and has spoken. We in the defense committee consider very much David's case to be part of the case that we are very, you know, much have to help with, because we consider that David protected an innocent sister. He did not harbor a criminal.
There's most people seem to feel, and I think you would agree, that Ms. Davis's case has received more publicity and attention in the black community than, say, that of the Panther 21. If you agree, would you care to comment as to why?
Well, I agree and disagree, but I think what
has
happened...
All right, how can you disagree?
Yes. I think what has happened is that a whole host of people in this country began to see that whenever black people or any radicals began to get the attention of masses of people, that they immediately became victims of repression. And that happened, whether it was so overtly as the shooting of Fred Hampton or the gagging and binding of Bobby Seale and so on, that people began to understand that this repression was becoming so great. And I think that acted as a backdrop then for the kind of momentum for the support that Angela got. So that I think Angela sees her case, and I think rightfully so, as part and parcel of all of the repression that has happened.
You mentioned earlier that one of the things that led to her development was the shock at the bombing of that church. Did she actually see it? Was she there at the time in that town in Birmingham, or was she elsewhere? And were you with her?
No, I was not with her. She was quite young. She was in Birmingham at the time. The children that were killed were friends of Fania's. Fania's Angela's younger sister. And Angela was friends of the older sisters of those children that were killed. So it was something that was very personal with her. I mean, and she was in the town.
She talked to you about it, and what did she say? How did she speak about that incident?
Well, she speaks about it in a number of ways. I think the first time that I ever heard her really talk about it was when I knew her in the days of SNCC, when she was a member of SNCC, before she was a member of the Communist Party. And she was quite concerned about a young man named Gregory Clark who had been killed by the police in Los Angeles. And she says, there's really no difference, you know. We have a people's tribunal, and the policeman goes free in Los Angeles, and they've never found those who were guilty of the bombing in Birmingham, although everybody knows who did it. So it seems that when the police are guilty of murder, it's justifiable homicide. When blacks are charged with murder, they are ipso facto guilty.
Miss Burnham, she will be tried by her peers. That's how the law reads.
Yes,
but will she
right
really? Person. Will she really? What would her peers be, as you see it?
Her peers would be men and women who were interviewed by Muhammad Speaks on the streets of Harlem. They would be black men and women who have come to realize, like Angela, that changes are needed in this society. It's unlikely that if her trial takes place in Marin County, she will be tried by those people. Marin County is a largely white, very, very wealthy county in California, with only a small pocket of black people. And it's highly improbable that in Marin County, or for that matter anywhere else in California, with the exception of two or three areas, that she would have her right to have a trial by her peers would be have any meaning.
Well, that's all we have time for, but I'd like to thank you all for coming. This program has been an attempt to clarify some of the issues that have been raised in the press as a result of Ms. Davis's actions. We believe that it is our responsibility as black journalists to attempt to present her side of the story in answer to the accusations that have been made against her. We'd like to thank Muhammad Speaks for offering us the first opportunity to present this interview on the air. All rights to that interview are reserved by Joe Walker of Muhammad Speaks and cannot be reused without their or his express permission. We at Like It Is want to encourage you to follow the events of Ms. Davis's future because of the significance that it holds for all of us.
Do you think Angela Davis will get a fair trial?
I don't think so, because she's black. I think they're going to, you know, send her to jail, and nobody's going to hear anything else about it. I think that things that they do to black people these days is not right. Like Edward Kennedy, he takes a girl on in the car, and she dies and whatnot, and he's set free, but Angela Davis didn't even do anything, and she's going to jail for it. I don't think it's right.
Did Angela Davis will get a fair trial?
No, I don't think she'll get a fair trial, because the idea that the first she has two things against her because she was, they say she's a communist, so... I really don't think she'll get a fair trial.
Thank you. Do you think that Angela Davis will get a fair trial?
I think so, yes.
You think so?
Yes. Because I think that the people will prove that she gets a fair trial.
Thank you. Do you think that Angela Davis will get a fair trial?
No.
Why?
I don't know, really. I just don't think they should get a fair trial.
Davis will get a fair trial.
I hope she do. I hope she gets a fair trial.
Do you think Angela Davis will get a fair trial?
In some court she will.
Why?
Because there's a lot of rumors going around about her. Anything like that. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure that she'll get a, maybe in a court of more blacks, maybe she would. But not in court of whites, I don't think.
In California?
No.
You think Angela Davis will get a fair trial?
Yes, I should, and I don't believe she can get a fair trial in the United States.
You want to tell us why?
Because I don't believe the United States is fair to black people. You could see this in our past history. Through the beginning of time, the United States has not been fair to black people. So I don't believe she can get a fair trial here, and especially not in California.